Hello, my friends. Welcome to Let's Talk. My name is Shay Marville, and I think one of the most important skills in this world is being able to have a conversation with a friend or a foe. Let's Talk is a podcast about listening, growing, connecting, and hoping through compassion and talking. And I mean really talking about the good things and the hard things, and with remarkable people living in a remarkable time. So let's talk. Hello, my friends. Welcome to Let's Talk. On today's episode, I have an incredible friend, Dr. Noman Naeem. He is a critical care physician. He's on the front lines in ICUs and emergency wards right now. He's been in the fight against the pandemic for the last 16 months. Dr. Naeem, thank you for being here. Welcome to Let's Talk. So let's talk. How are you doing after 16 months of this?
Well, it's been quite a roller coaster, you know, with several waves of the pandemic, at least here in Canada. We're on the downtrend of the third wave, and yes. It was the worst period in the pandemic here in Canada. I know other parts of the world had different experiences. However, I feel like we're finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. It's been a difficult 16 months, and I've seen a lot of people get very critically ill, even people who didn't get critically ill but ended up hospitalized. And I've seen the long-term effects of COVID-19 as well in some patients. So, yeah.
We're hearing a lot about the effects of COVID after you have healed from COVID. Mm-hmm. So is that something that you're seeing a lot of right now, or people who are dealing with the effects of COVID?
Yes. I mean, I think some of the common symptoms that I'm seeing, say, months after people have recovered are things like some shortness of breath, there's fatigue, brain fog, those sorts of things. And I don't think we truly understand why people are having these long-term effects. I think there's still a lot we need to learn about what they're now calling long COVID.
Mm-hmm. So, how do you manage your own fear? Maybe fear isn't the right word, but number one, I see clinicians like yourself who are putting yourself on the front lines. You were never, when you went to medical school, you weren't told a pandemic was coming, but now you're here and you are fighting it. How do you manage your own stress around dealing with this?
Right. So, it's an interesting question when we saw what it all started in Wuhan, China. And, nobody thought that this was going to be a pandemic at that time, but there were rumblings of that. The way I started looking at it is that, this is a distinct possibility, which it obviously turned out to be. The way I handle my stress is multifaceted. So the most superficial level is that, I take all the precautions that I need to do. Right. I mean, when I'm working in the hospital, obviously I'm washing my hands, I'm masking, I'm using the personal protective equipment.
Yes.
But then there's more to it than that. So there's also at the level of looking after my own immune system, because what the media is not talking about is that all the different things that we can do with our immunity to prevent getting infected, even if we're exposed, things like, nutrition, movement, sleep, meditation, supplements, all sorts of things. Probably too much to get into in this conversation.
No, this is interesting because
I was already implementing those things long before I knew there was a pandemic coming, because that's just my lifestyle, right? To look after myself. Otherwise, I'm not setting a good example. And then there's the level of thought and emotion. I have been a victim of negative thinking in my life, I would say, just because of how I grew up and all the challenges I faced early on in my life. But I have, over time, through various means and processes, I have learned to overcome my negative thinking. And it doesn't mean that it still doesn't creep in. It does from time to time, but I know when it does and I know how to manage it. Because when you have that negative thinking and those limiting beliefs and those things, it affects the way you deal with stress, and it can actually affect your body's ability to fight off infection and other illness. So there's a level of thought, and then there's a level of emotions. And I'm at the point in my life where whatever I am feeling, I will let myself experience it. I don't hold back, because when you hold back, how you're feeling, no matter how negative you may perceive it to be, that's going to get lodged in your body. It's going to manifest as symptoms. So it's also on the level of feeling. And then, there's the deeper level of knowing who I truly am, right? Knowing who I am beyond my body, beyond my thought, beyond my emotions, the deeper level of being. And we can get into that if you'd like, but it would take us to a different place. But that's how I manage my stress.
You've just opened a whole new realm in the conversation. And so I just want to slow down. Let's do a slow dance on this. Mm-hmm. So I asked you, how you're looking after your own health and protecting yourself. And you just gave me a really unconventional answer that I think is very exciting. Because you're talking about something that we're not really talking about, which is our own mental state and our own psychological and emotional immunity as we combat this virus and the economic ramifications, the psychological ramifications, and this whole transformation that we're going through. So this is, I want to go down this road with you, because you are you're a traditional, conventional physician, but you also have this other side to you.
Right.
So talk about that a little, unpack that a little bit more with me.
Right. So my journey to this place where I'm at now, actually started in my childhood. It started with my interest in learning about human potential and human behavior. And it was because of some adverse experiences I had in my childhood around, trauma and racial discrimination. And I don't think I've ever told you this, Shay, but I mean, when I was 6 years old, I had someone pull out a knife on me, a teenager, someone who's like 18 or 19. Pull out a knife and threaten me. I was 6 years old. So you can imagine what that does to your personality.
Yes.
You grow up with the feeling that the world is not a safe place.
Yes.
And then going beyond that, that was when I was living in Scarborough. We had moved out to Oshawa. And then, I faced a lot of racial discrimination because I lived in a low socioeconomic neighborhood. And then only South Asian family in that neighborhood, only South Asian child in my school. So I faced a lot of challenges early on and didn't have a lot of support to deal with them. So I got really interested in human behavior. Why do people do the way things they do? And I started to dive really, really deep at that time. Maybe not so much in my childhood, but maybe when I got into early adolescence, I discovered people like Wayne Dyer and Deepak Chopra. I started diving deep into that. And I really, really started to, uncover the depths of who we are as human beings, because I had to find a way for me to deal with everything, these challenges I was facing.
Yes.
And the only way I could do that was to find mentors. The mentors were not with me physically, but I found them in these authors and these speakers. And that led me down this path to self-discovery and to overcome all that negative thinking that arose out of the challenges I faced early on in my life.
So you were violated, really, when someone pulls a knife on you or tries to physically attack you.
Yeah.
So there's that trauma, and then there's the mental piece around how did you report it? Did you talk to your family? Like, what?
I did. Yes. I went home when that happened. He basically pulled out the knife, and I just ran. He didn't chase me or anything.
Yes.
And I hadn't provoked it in any way. I was just walking home from school. So I went and told my parents. The next day I went and told my teachers. And then you know what happened the next day? And I'll never forget this. That student walked home with me the next day because I was afraid to walk home alone. And then we saw those two teenagers. Mm. And she confronted them from a distance. She basically said, you know, asked them. All I remember is that she asked them what their names are and she wrote them down. And I was like terrified because I remember them from the day before. So, and I don't even remember what happened with that information, whether they got reported or what happened. But it's something that really created this limiting belief in me that the world is not a safe place. And you know, when you look at human history. Right. If you look at human history, going back hundreds and even thousands of years, basically what human history is, what happened to me is a microcosm. It's just basically human history, unfortunately, is just one group of people inflicting either control or harm on another. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say that, but this is the history of humanity. And I don't mean to sound negative. I'm not saying that good things don't happen, that there's not good people in the world, that there aren't people who are working for the betterment of humanity. But this is what the bulk of our history is. And what happens is that these I'm talking about this traumatic event from my childhood, but these traumatic events get passed down from generation to generation.
Yes.
And, they get passed on to our children. And this is the other thing that I started to discover as a physician is that my patients were not only just dealing with their own negative thinking, their limiting beliefs, their emotional blocks. You know, a lot of my patients would they have anxiety, depression, addiction, whatever, and they can't pinpoint anything traumatic that's happened in their life. But I've discovered this whole concept of ancestral trauma,
yes,
which means that it doesn't have to be in your lifetime. It could have been passed down from a previous generation and you just don't know about it. There's also in utero trauma. There's birth trauma. There's all these things that the medical community knows nothing about because you can't prove it.
Yes.
There's no way to prove it. And actually, there has been a study that has shown this in mice, that trauma can be passed down. There is a study. I mean, I can discuss it, but I don't want to get off topic.
Right.
But this is another thing I've discovered. And my ancestry suffered trauma because, you know, my parents are from Pakistan. And, In when India was under the occupation of the British, before that, the Hindus and the Muslims lived in peace. It was not until the British arrived that there was conflict between these groups, which led to the partition and the creation of the country of Pakistan.
Yes.
There's trauma in my ancestry.
Yes, yes, all of us. But do you think it's also about the unspokenness of the trauma and mm-hmm. but yet it impacts your behavior. So
yes.
What you experience as a child mm-hmm. in terms of how is how your parents treat you or how your family members treat you mm-hmm. or how you're treated in the school system because of things that have happened that are unspoken. How does that then Like, how do you, when you see a, or you're working with a patient, do you talk to people about their backgrounds? I mean, of course, you don't want to make assumptions about anyone before, when
no,
they come in, but
I don't make. No.
But you're taking all of that into consideration, right? When you're
right.
working with a patient.
Right. So the thing is that when I see a patient for the first time, I take a very detailed history, and there's several levels to treating a patient, right? So initially, you know, they're coming to me with symptoms. I need to just get the symptoms under control. So a lot of my patients, I'm a respirologist and a critical care physician, so they come to me with respiratory issues. They may have asthma, they may have COPD, other diagnoses. I just want to get those under control, right? Because that's all the patient really wants when they first come to you. But then once I've established a relationship, and let's just take asthma, for example. And I can best demonstrate this through a patient story. Is that okay to share here?
Yes, I would appreciate it.
I'll give you an example. This is the best way to demonstrate this is story. I love stories. Storytelling is the most ancient of arts in human history. So there's this patient that came to me. Let's call her Mary. She came to me same time last year, 71-year-old female, who came to me for respiratory symptoms. I did a breathing test, which we call spirometry. I diagnosed her with asthma. I started her on inhalers and I treated her. But then there was something that was wrong. She had this aura of anxiety about her. And there was something else going on. It wasn't just about her having asthma. So I started to ask her more questions. And this visit turned into like half an hour to 40 minutes. And what I discovered is that she's been suffering with anxiety all her life.
I see.
So, let me tell you more. So I probed deeper. And what I discovered is that her father was emotionally abusive to her mother and her, and he was a narcissist. And this is the thing about her father that she told me. She felt her father was a laborer, but he had always wanted to be a professional, a lawyer or a banker or whatever, but he never got the opportunity. He had a lot of anger and he took it out on his wife and this patient, Mary. I'll call her Mary.
Yes.
And it was an abusive situation. And what happened is that when she went on to get married, she married someone who mirrored her father because her father found her husband and forced her to marry another narcissist. Oh. And she went on to have three kids and she lived with him for 30 years before she finally found the courage to leave him. So she did leave him, but she still had that pain.
Yes.
Of her upbringing and this marriage to this narcissist. That was the root of her symptoms. And I helped her realize that. And by the end of that visit, 30 or 40 minutes, she actually broke down in tears.
So wait a second. So when you say it was the root, yeah. Are you saying that, you know, she was she physically learned to manage living with abuse and mm-hmm. that then had, you know, that impacted her physiology?
Yes, it impacted her physiology because, you know, we all by now, I mean, we know about the mind-body connection.
Yes.
We know that our thinking can affect our physiology. And proof of that is that the medical community recognizes a condition called Takotsubo cardiomyopathy. Cardiomyopathy means that the heart muscle becomes weak and it doesn't pump very well. And this is a known condition recognized by cardiologists, and there is no known cause except stress. So the fact that the medical community acknowledges that stress causes this type of heart failure or cardiomyopathy, I mean, they've already identified a condition that is directly related to stress. Why cannot stress be a factor in other health conditions, all our health conditions, in fact, which is rooted in our negative thinking, our suppressed emotions, and all those aspects. So yes, our thinking and does affect our physiology. And this is the problem with our medical system is that as physicians, we're taught to work at the level of the physiology of the body, but we're not taught to look at the mind-body connection, the heart-mind connection, and to look at the deeper aspects of who we are, right? I mean, who are we truly? Are we our physiology? Are we our thoughts? Are we our emotions? I mean, I would argue that we're none of those things. We are that consciousness that underlies, all of life. It underlies who we are. And I would even go as far as to say that, you know, our life on this earth is just one incarnation of our consciousness. It's just this physical incarnation on this planet.
So how do you then, as a working conventional specialist clinician, bring this holistic perspective to helping your patients, and how do you do that right now because you know lots of other things are going on beyond COVID, and people are suffering and really struggling right now. So how do you approach that?
So it's a challenge, because to do it on an individual basis is not easy, because first you have to get the patient to recognize that there are deeper issues that underlying their health conditions. Now, with this patient, Mary, I was able to get her to realize that, because she was suffering with so much anxiety that it didn't take much. Like, she already at some level knew this.
Yes.
She just needed someone to actually acknowledge and validate it for her, right? But not everybody is like that. So the way I do this is through what I'm doing right now, getting on podcasts. I'm blogging. I've written a book, Healing from the Inside Out. I feel that I need to be out there on a greater level than just one-on-one, because this is knowledge that needs to get out there. And I mean, you know, the studies show that 70% of patients who see conventional physicians seek alternative treatment. So that tells me that, you know, people are already, seekers. They are seeking some answers beyond what conventional medicine provides. But the thing is that there's so much out there, and you don't know what to believe and what's the truth and what's not. And you know, there's so many, for lack of a better word, quacks out there, I'll say. and often, you know, all these things get hijacked. But the thing is, what I feel that makes me different is that, you know, I'm rooted in science, because I actually am a practicing physician. I have not given up my medical practice. I mean,
I hope not.
There's people like Deepak. No, I have not. Deepak Chopra is an MD. He was an endocrinologist. He has completely given up medical practice decades ago, and he just does his Ayurveda and consciousness work and other retreats and things like that. I'm not knocking him. He does wonderful work. He's made an incredible impact on the world. It's just that I feel that we need to marry the two. We need to marry the conventional. We need to bridge the conventional. It's not about ignoring the physical. It's not about shunning medications and procedures and surgeries. Those may be needed in a patient's journey, but you need to do that in the context of the patient's the mind, their emotions, their life story, their relationships. The path that their career has taken them on. All those things need to be taken into account. And the problem with the medical system is that it focuses on disease, but that is completely misguided. The focus should not be on disease. The focus needs to be on the whole individual, because we are not just a bunch of symptoms and a diagnosis.
Yes.
We are more than that. The diagnosis happens in the context of all the things I've already mentioned. And that's where I think medicine and the healthcare system needs to go. And it hasn't gone there yet.
Well, I think it's in the process in many ways, because I think there are
clinicians like yourself, and then there's also practitioners of wellness like myself, who and many others who are partnering and collaborating. I think we are too siloed, and everyone should be seeking they should be seeking references and doing research, and then coming together and sharing stories and information, because there everybody is different, everyone requires different things. The thing I wanted to ask you about was also the concept of placebo. You know, many people are really confused about, you know, what is a placebo and how does it work, and I was just wondering, you know, what your experiences with placebos, and how would you explain the use of placebos?
So when traditionally, when a new a drug is brought to market, it needs to be tested against a placebo. What a placebo means is basically something that looks like a pill but has no effect, because all it is just sugar, or it's nothing. It's just something that's formed into a pill, and usually it's used to test against an actual medication that's being brought to market to treat any number of conditions. And you know what's interesting is that, you know, I don't quote me on this, but I think for the FDA, all you have to show is a 10%. The Food and Drug Administration in the United States, all you have to show is a 10% benefit from the medication to have it approved. Now that's a long process. It takes several years and different phases. There's animal trials, there's clinical trials, human trials, but that's all you need to show. And if you're going to show that a drug that's brought to market only is 10% better than doing nothing at all, then there is something to that nothing. That nothing is not nothing, it's something. And what the placebo effect really is, I think, is the power of belief. If you have a belief that you can heal, that you can get better, that you can overcome whatever is ailing you, then that is the most powerful medicine in the world. And, you know, we all suffer from limiting beliefs, but we can change them into empowering beliefs. And I believe that the power of placebo is the power of changing our beliefs to ones that serve us, not bring us down and limit us.
And don't you think also how we define healing or being cured is maybe incorrect? Like, you can have a belief that you will survive something, but you've gotten a diagnosis that's quite dire. And sometimes you don't survive, right? But that doesn't mean that believing in the value of your living while you are, you know, trying to fight this illness or disease doesn't matter, right?
Exactly, right. Because the thing is that, you know, it's interesting you should say that. I'll make a distinction between healing and cure and healing, which I make in my book as well. So cure, basically the traditional definition of a cure is that complete resolution of the condition at the level of the physical, meaning that you don't have any symptoms, you don't have any manifestations, and you don't have any other of the effects of that condition. But healing, it means to me, healing. So the root of the word healing is from the word whole.
Yes.
And healing basically means cultivation and integration of all the levels of who you are. So the levels of who we are, you know, the most superficial is the physical. And then there's the mental, the thoughts that we've talked about. Then there's the emotional, the feelings and all the emotional blocks that we have, that are suppressed emotions.
Yes.
There's the vibrational. We're vibrational beings. We're just beings of energy. You know, Einstein showed that energy and matter are essentially interchangeable. And there's a deeper part of who we are, which is consciousness or spirit. Mm-hmm. So disease happens within this framework of who we are. So healing means to integrate all those and to become whole.
Yes.
And in the process of being whole, you know, could your disease process improve? Could your symptoms get better? Could it, could your disease process improve? Yes, potentially, because there's this phenomenon of spontaneous remission, which many different clinicians have discussed in the literature, not just around advanced cancer, but other conditions. And Andrew Weil, who's an integrative physician in Arizona, he's written a book called Spontaneous Remission, where he talks about this. And Kelly Turner, who is a PhD researcher in cancer, has also discussed this in her work. So there is this phenomenon of a spontaneous remission. And what I believe spontaneous remission from a condition is that the person has integrated at those deeper levels, all the aspects of who they are. And in that context, they have experienced remission.
See, but I think one of the challenges with that concept is that, I think you want to always be careful, not you as in VU. You want to be careful that you don't give people false hope is one
exactly.
thing. But two is, the other thing is, and this is what I've discovered in practicing meditation for 30 plus years, is that understanding your body and your mind holistically is a process that requires ongoing cultivation. And it's not something like, something happens to you, you have a disease or you have an illness and you should start thinking positive right away and affirming that, and then you're going to feel better and then you're going to be healed. It's not like that. I think that our health is holistic, like you're saying. And I think the difficulty is, as clinicians or practitioners, is that you want to always give people as much information for them to then become empowered and engaged in their own health, right?
I agree. Because the thing about healing is that, people are looking for a destination. I'm not even talking about regarding disease, a destination is the cure, right?
Right. Okay.
But we're all looking for a destination. We're looking for, to reach that financial threshold so we can retire and finally be free. Or we may be looking for that one person that's going to complete us, that we can live happily ever after, or whatever it may be. The thing that you need to realize, there is no destination. Mm. There is nowhere to get to. Okay. There is nowhere to get to. It's all a journey. It's a never-ending journey. And, the thing is that you may find that person that you spend whatever 10, 15, 20 years with, and then all of a sudden you both change and you move in different directions and the relationship ends. Right. Mm-hmm. You may, be financially secure, then all of a sudden there's a market crash and you lose half of your investments in the stock market. So the thing is that, it's this process, it's this journey, that is, the true meaning of life. We're not trying to get to a specific destination.
Right.
It's living that life and where that journey it begins is right in this very moment. It does not matter where you're at. It's this moment. Can you be fully present where you are?
Mm.
Can you be fully present with wherever you're at in your life? Because there is nowhere else you can be. Eckhart Tolle has written a remarkable book, The Power of Now. I encourage everyone to read it. He talks about the power of presence and the fact that there is nothing else but the present moment. There is nothing else. And the thing is that even if your outer circumstances are less than ideal,
yes.
Can you be anywhere else than where you are right now? No, you can't. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't take action. Like if you're in an abusive relationship, I'm not saying you just stay there and then take the abuse. You have to become fully present in order to deal with the situation,
yes.
be embodied, and then you can take action. You cannot take action from a place of lamenting about a past, a less than ideal past, or looking ahead to the future. You need to be right here in the moment, and that's where the journey begins.
Okay, so this is really, really fascinating because right now, you know, we're going through this sort of Groundhog Day of the pandemic and all the fear and that is surrounding that. Yeah. A lot of people are suffering right now mentally. A lot of people are contemplating, very serious decisions. A lot of people are dealing with addiction. A lot of people are dealing with, suicide and depression and anxiety. What are your three things that you think we as individuals should be doing or paying attention to, not doing, but paying attention to right now as we move through this new place?
Okay. So the first thing I would say is that what I have already just said, that you need to become fully present to whatever is happening in your life. And the way to do that, you know, that sounds very abstract. A very real way I would say is just focus on your breathing. Always be conscious of your breath, because your breath will reflect to you the state you're in. You know, if your breathing is fast and erratic, you're hyperventilating, then you're in a very anxious or stressed state. If you're slow down your breathing, take deep, slow breaths, it will help to activate the part of your autonomic nervous system that deals with relaxation. So the first thing I would say is focus on your breath, okay? And the second thing I would say is this. What is the most pertinent thing in your life that you need to deal with right now? It could be your health. Maybe because of the pandemic, you've been laid off or lost your job and you need to do something about your financial situation. Maybe that's what it is. Or maybe you're in a strained relationship that's not serving you. So you need to identify. So once you're fully present, then you need to identify what is the most pertinent thing I need to deal with. Because it's easy to get overwhelmed, right? We are dealing with all sorts of issues. It's so easy to get overwhelmed. But you need to deal with the most pertinent thing. That you can do that is the most important thing for you right now. Then the third step is to make a list of all the different things you can do to move the needle in a positive direction for that thing that you have identified that is the most pertinent thing you need to deal with in your life. Let's use an example. Let's just say that you've lost your job. Okay, so you have no source of income. So what are there's so many things that people can do. So
like I'm going to make this like practical. What? Like
there's
what?
So
like
many
what?
Things you can do. So some of the things are cut back on your expenses. You can sell things that you don't really need. Mm. You can downsize. Your living quarters. You can, do odd jobs. You can barter with people for services. There's so many things that people can do. You can, and the thing is, we get stuck, right? Because we when we're in a situation that's challenging, we often get caught in that fight, flight, or freeze response,
right?
So the thing is that we can't freeze. Freeze will never serve you. Sometimes you need to run, but sometimes you need to stand and fight. But in a situation like that, when you're facing, say, financial struggle, it doesn't become about fight or flight. It becomes about that chronic stress that the fight or flight triggers. And the thing is, the way you deal with that is this, you focus on your breath, get present. Find the most pertinent thing and make a list of all the things you can do to deal with that situation. I use the example of finances. It can apply to anything. And then you pick two or three of them and you focus on just, it could be a list of 20 or 30 things that you've identified that you can do. Don't overwhelm yourself. Just pick the top two or three and focus on those and start with the thing that you can do right now. In this moment, and there is always something you can do right now for whatever challenge you're facing.
Can you tell me this? A lot of people think about, like, when someone says, you know, focus on your breathing, they say, yeah, I'll do that later. Why is breathing so important? Why is focusing on breathing so important?
Yeah, so that's a multi-layered answer to that question. The first thing is that we rely on our breathing to get oxygen into our lungs, and oxygen is what the blood is the role of the blood cells to carry to all our organs for them to function properly. So breathing from a physiological point of view, it's important for oxygen delivery, number one. Number two, by controlling our breath, we can control, there's a part of our nervous system called the autonomic nervous system that controls all our internal functions. And that is involved in fight or flight. So there's two parts, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. When you're in fight or flight or freeze, your sympathetic is activated. And in the sympathetic, you know, you're getting ready to run or you're getting ready to fight. And, you know, you have your heart rate increases, your pupils are dilated, you know, you're breathing fast. And by slowing your breathing down, you activate the parasympathetic system, which puts you in the relaxation response. And in that relaxation response phase, you are better able to deal with stress. And the other reason why breath is important is because a lot of the meditation traditions rely on breath in order to help take us deeper. Because the purpose of meditation is to take you to the depths of your being, to who you truly are, and to uncover your true nature. That is the true purpose of meditation, right? And, you know, a lot of the meditation traditions use breath to help you take that inner journey. So there's all the reasons why breathing is so important.
Brilliant. I think you need to come back on. I'd like to hear what listeners say. I think, you know, I have been talking about you coming on to the show, and I've had a lot of questions. People have been very curious. So I think this is a good beginning conversation. Can you, as a last comment, would you tell us a little bit about, I know it's a few years old now, but you did write a book a couple of years ago called Healing from the Inside Out. Can you just talk about it a little bit, and then we can talk about it further when you come back.
Sure. So I wrote this book because of all my experiences in the healthcare system and with patients, and I combined my knowledge of health and healing with all the prior reading and study I had done on human potential and metaphysics and consciousness. And this is basically a book about what it truly means to heal. I talk about everything I've talked about here on this interview about the multi-dimensional nature and how healing is really a process of becoming whole. And I take the reader on a journey to that place of becoming whole, no matter what they may be suffering from. It's available through Amazon, through Indigo, or any other bookstore, and you can order it online. So yeah, that's what my book's about.
Has that book been well received?
It has been well received, and I've gotten a lot of great reviews about it. I would like to have it more widespread, because I think that there's a lot of, if nothing else, it will open people's eyes and help them see themselves in a different way.
Yeah, I think it's a great book. I read it a few years ago, and then I reached out to you actually because I thought it's so relevant for right now, and especially as we move. I consider this moment that we are in as transformational, and it's a moment where everyone in the world has one thing in common. You know, if nothing else, I mean, beyond our humanness, we have the effects of the pandemic, whether we believe it or we don't believe it, whether we wear a mask or we don't wear a mask, and all of the things that go along with that. And I do believe that this is a moment. I think it's more than a reset. I think this is an opportunity to actually become ourselves. What do you agree with that, or disagree, or you know, how do
you completely
feel?
Agree. I believe that this is a truly a pivotal moment in human history where we have all been on a path of unsustainability and selfishness. I don't mean individual selfishness, but selfishness as a human race, in the sense that we just care about our own individual selves. We have decimated the environment, the atmosphere. We're dealing with the effects of climate change. We're losing, marine life at an alarming rate. So this is a wake up call, because, we have lived as though we are arrogantly as humanity, as though, we are the only people, we are the only thing that matters on this planet. And also we've been living selfishly. That may seem harsh.
Yes.
But just look at the history. Look at our history.
Yes.
I mean, if you don't like what I'm saying, then look at the history of humanity and tell me that it's not otherwise. Just I challenge you to do that. World wars, dictatorships, decimation of indigenous populations all over the world, racial discrimination, slavery, human trafficking, you name it.
Yes, we've done the bad things very well. Yes. I think the reason why we've survived those things is because of our the humanity in us. And I do think even though those things are true, and even right now up to today, the trauma and the torments continue, but there's so many of us rising now as well. And I think what you're doing is so brave, because you are practicing and believing in your patients and practicing your craft, but you're also opening new doorways and questions. I think that's very brave. So I want to thank you for that. And I want to invite you to come back on so we can have a, deeper places as we grow in our listenership and find out more about what listeners want to hear as well.
Right. So is it okay if I leave your listeners with a quote?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to give you two quotes. The first one is this, and I live my life by this tenet. If at some point you don't ask yourself, what have I gotten myself into, then you're not doing it right. I live my life by that quote. And the second quote I want to leave you with is this. So fate whispers to the warrior, a storm is coming. The warrior whispers back, I am the storm. That's it.
Who are they by?
The first one is by Roland Gao,
yes,
who's a management professor in China. The second one, I have no idea. Mm. I cannot identify the source.
That is a beaut. They're both very thought provoking, as you are. Thank you so much. I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you for joining the conversation. We are growing an amazing community here at Let's Talk. Please share the show. Make sure you're subscribing and keep talking. And you can always reach out to me at CoachShayMarville.com or on Instagram at ShayMarville. Let's Talk. Let's keep talking.